the Uber critic McDonald. We're back again talking about, I mean, Mother's Day isn't really a holiday per se. Or is it? I don't know. It's a calendar day. I think about
holidays. Tell that to your wife and see what the reaction is.
I consider holidays to be like, you know, you get the day off from work and school and stuff. I guess it's a holiday, sure. It's a you know, it's one of those weird gray areas. I don't really think of it as a holiday. It's a very important day, but it's not like Christmas, Easter, Mother's Day, Father's Day.
I really do believe that it has come to that status. I mean,
it's as important as those?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
For example, I think it's just that, you know, we'll talk about this, but, you know, mothers do more for creating this world than any other person.
Well, literally, yeah.
You know, in that sense too, you know, you know, it was just a natural that something like this would come about. And I think it's, for example, a lot more important than Father's Day, but we can have debate that.
I would not go that far because, I mean, without one, it's like, you know.
Well, I mean, you know what I'm saying, as a holiday, as something that is focused on. Now, obviously, the crass consumer capitalistic society that we live in has
that I call home. Yes. Hey, look, I'm part of that society too, and I place equal importance on both days. But we are talking about Mother's Day, and I will say, yeah, the family I had growing up, mom was very important in helping getting me through, and in the face of who my father was.
Well, there you go.
But you know, that's not a universal experience, certainly necessarily. But
well, more than you think.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, I certainly found that out as I've lived through life.
Yeah. Well, and we'll talk. We'll do a little mini tribute to our mothers at the end of this show.
Yes, we will.
Don't let me forget to do that.
No, please. I have to.
Okay. But you know, we're talking about Mother, not Mother, the 2018 or whatever Jennifer Lawrence movie. But we're talking about the Albert Brooks movie, Mother, no exclamation point. Yes.
Although 1996.
Right. This could have had an exclamation point because I feel like Albert Brooks's character in this movie is constantly going, Mother. But yeah, I'd never seen this movie before.
Cool.
I'm an Albert Brooks fan, but a recent one. It's only in the last, you know, half decade plus I've really discovered his movies. I knew Defending Your Life from forever ago, but you know, Real Life, I think, is an amazing film.
Yeah.
You know, he's,
have you seen Modern Romance?
Oh my gosh, have I? I don't remember. I know I saw Lost in America, but yeah. I'm still making my way through his filmography.
Well, it's pretty short because he had a 14-year gap between The Muse and Seeking Muslims in the Real World, or whatever that title was.
I think it was Seeking Muslims in the Real. It was Seeking Comedy in the Muslim World.
There you go. I knew there was something like that.
Your movie would have been completely different.
Yes, it would have, but that's the reason he made that film. So I just want to talk about his run for a second from like 1979 up to Mother. You had Real Life, Modern Romance, Lost in America, Defending Your Life, and Mother. An incredible run of films. There's almost no comparison. Maybe you have to go back to Billy Wilder, where he had that run from in the mid-50s to the early 60s, but Brooks, these are all just excellent films. And I'm telling you, when I first saw Mother, it was a letdown because everything else before it had been so amazing. But I appreciate it so much more seeing it today. And I hadn't seen it since it came out.
I feel like I'm closer to where you were on that first viewing. And maybe I just need to give it some time because it is different than his other films. This feels the most personal, and I think that's a benefit and also a kind of a detriment, because not knowing the specifics of what he was kind of going through with his mother, or if this is indeed based on, you know, his experiences growing up and his relationship with his family, it just felt like there was too much that was kept inside and not enough that made it out onto the page or the screen.
Oh, it's very interesting. I just felt like he wasn't doing so much an overview of his own relationship with his mother, but there were similarities, of course. His father died when he was very young, and you get the idea that in this picture, their father died when, you know, they were relatively young, and she had to, like, complete the raising of the two sons, and, you know, again, feeling those feelings of angst because of that, mm-hmm. and trying to come to the centerpiece of it. So let's, I guess, start with a summation of the plot. Not much of a plot, but
it's simple. That's compared to things we have now, like Doctor Strange 2, it's really nice to go back to a movie that's really just about one thing.
Thumbs up or down on that, sir?
Way down.
Way down.
And this is a spoiler for the Thursday night live stream we're doing. I am going to announce, well, I guess I'm announcing now, I'm done with comic book movies for the foreseeable wow. future. This broke me. I'm done.
Dude.
Yeah.
And you were a comic book fan, right?
I still read comic books. I'm going to take the money I would have spent watching comic book movies and just buy old comics.
You want to know what my rating was?
11 out of 10.
4.5 out of 5. Close.
There you go.
I've never seen you throw up your hand in frustration. That was awesome.
Well, let's get back to Mother.
Yes, please. Let's stay on the topic because everybody's anticipating our discussion of Mother.
Of course. This is our Mother's Day episode. You can't.
Yes,
this,
it is.
This
it
is coming
our
out.
Mother's Day episode.
It's coming out later today to guarantee that Mother's Day can go forth. Because
yes.
by law, it can't unless we do a show about the holiday.
I'm glad you're putting it out today. I was thinking tomorrow morning, but any time just before the day.
Yeah.
So people can sit back and get geared up.
Yes. So, go ahead and encapsulate the film.
Well,
if you would.
It's really simple. It's a Albert Brooks plays John, a guy who has just divorced his second wife. And he has no idea why he can't connect in a relationship. So, you know, he's a writer of science fiction, has some success. So he has some time to take off while he's working on his new book. And he decides to do an experiment. He decides to move into his old room in his old house, make it exactly how it was, and live with his mother to find out the source of his angst and sorrow. In relationships with women. So that's it, baby. And in the meantime, he has a brother played by Rob Morrow who has a different relationship with mother, and that comes to fore in the film. So
let's pull over a second.
Yeah.
Wasn't Rob Morrow the star of Northern Exposure?
He was, sir.
I don't think I watched Northern Exposure. I'm a little bit young for that, but I vaguely remember him being on the show.
Right.
After watching him in Mother, I don't know how he had a career at all, unless he was vastly different, because he was like, but Mom, it's a telephone. It's got a TV and the telephone. You got to move over, Mom. I'm like, that was his entire performance the entire time.
Well, I think there was a little more than that. He represented another relationship that John didn't have, and that relationship was as damaged as John's was in a different way, as we find out with the brief argument with his wife.
I'm not criticizing the writing. I think it's a really strong character. It's just his performance. I had to turn my TV down whenever he opened his damn mouth.
The bit with the picture phone was hilarious, but here we are in technology where we're actually talking over some magical line. And there the early technology, which number one made it funny, and number two, she couldn't operate it, which is exactly like my mother.
Well, yeah, it's funny because my wife and I, we are now at the point where we're going, you know, a few doors down to help our in-laws do things like order something off of Amazon, you know?
Right.
But actually another side tangent, I'm sorry, but the phone, the MCI picture phone, it reminded me of the video phone from Alien, which came out 10 years before this movie. So I'm wondering, did somebody at MCI watch Alien and be like, that's amazing? And then they developed that, and now we have Zoom.
Well, you see that technology, you're just like, wow, that was pretty cool back then that you could project an image over the telephone wire. And look how bad the image was. But again, it made for some really easy comedy, let's say.
Yes.
Which I think Brooks loves, you know, things like those repeating jokes that have really nothing to do with the story if you look at his other films.
Yeah. Well, and also this kind of fascination with technology as well, like we saw in real life as far as like reality TV and like the giant camera head and all that business.
Right.
But yeah, so there is a gag. Rob Morrow plays the younger brother who's really, for lack of a better term, a mama's boy, but he's also a wildly successful sports agent with the wife and the kids, and everything kind of seems perfect on the outside. He collects like sports memorabilia and all that. And he's got these MCI phones that he just gives away to people for free because he gets them, but he like wants to impress people. I can get you one of those phones. No big deal.
Yeah.
Or should I say, I can get you one of those phones. No big deal.
I guess I didn't notice really his performance, except when he came in and infiltrated John and his mother's experiment, which, again, if you're talking about an experiment, you throw another different element into an experiment and then see what happens. And it was great. I guess bottom line, when I saw this at age 36, I won't say the year. I saw that it was came out 10 years ago. No, when I saw it at age 36, I didn't get it. Now I completely get it. I mean, I completely get this film, and it's not that I have to go home for an experiment, but there's a similar dynamic happening between my mother and I where we're coming to a different form of a relationship because of my father's passing. Mm. So I'm fucking Albert Brooks in that movie. Excuse my language.
No, it's okay. No, you know, and we'll get to this. Don't let me forget to come back to this point. We talk about our moms.
End. Yeah, we'll do that.
But it's, yeah, I've got sort of a different.
Get your handkerchiefs out because it's going to be good.
Yes. But no, I've got sort of a different lens that I view my relationship with from my mom, because everybody's different and everything, but it's still a very special bond. But, you know, it's weird because this is the first time or the second time in about 2 weeks that I've actually seen something with Debbie Reynolds in it. The first time was Singing in the Rain, which I watched the film version of the first time 2 weeks ago when she was.
Never seen Singing in the Rain.
I'd seen a stage production of it, which was amazing. Okay. But then I watched the movie for the first time, and she's, you know, she was 18, which I couldn't believe when she made that
movie.
And it's, you know, you understand why she became a star. Now watching something that came out, you know, 30 plus years after that, and she's still great in this movie.
She absolutely knew that character, understood it, and delivered it with perfection. I was like, again, looking at through a different lens years later after it came out, I was so impressed with Debbie Reynolds. I do believe she was nominated for Best Actress, but I'd have to look it up.
Wow.
I do believe she was nominated, didn't win, but, you know. I'm sure. Yeah. Maybe not. I don't know. But again, it just kind of tells you how different movies were back then. That, you know, Albert Brooks was on a roll. His pictures were making money. So he was getting a green light for virtually anything he could think of. And this one was a lot more sedate than the ones that were previous. Even, you know, a lot of people think defending his life, well, that's the last word on the Albert Brooks character. He finally had the courage to do something. Well, he kind of takes a step back with Mother from defending your life and puts himself in a different trial.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, the writing is very sharp, but it almost feels like it starts off, there's a lot of heavy comedy in the beginning, where they're meeting with the divorce lawyer, and then later he meets up with John C. McGinley in the bar, and, you know, it's his best friend, and they're kind of commiserating, and that's very good. And even when he first goes to, you know, hang out with his mother, and she's opening the freezer and pulling out the off-brand ice cream that's, you know, you have to break through. I can't remember what they called it.
The thing that came out of that was the protective ice.
The protective ice.
If anybody has seen that movie, they talk about the protective ice.
That's
named you named the scum that's at the top. It's like eating an orange shoe.
Yes. And Brooks's reaction when he's like just trying to get this stuff out of his mouth is just beautiful. It's you know, you don't really think of him necessarily as a physical comedian, but when he it's like all of that id comes out in his physical performance, just wonderful.
Right.
But then, you know, there was kind of a dry, I'll call it a dry spell. The middle of this movie, it feels more like psychoanalysis without a whole lot of comedy. I started to get a little bit worried. I was also watching it kind of late, but then it really picks up when we start finding out, like getting to the truth of what mom's life was about before he came along. And it leads to an ending that I was at once happy with, but also kind of troubled by, in terms of, I feel like if this movie were made today, there might be a bit more, what I'll call sensitivity to mom's happy ending rather than just John, the son who got what he wanted out of the experiment. But well, I feel like there needed to be a tie-in between her rediscovering some magic from her youth, him getting what he needed out of the experiment, but also acknowledging, hey, mom, I'm going to help you relive this, you know, get back some of this magical feeling of being
it's
creative.
It's interesting because I believe the key scene is when they have the back and forth about her writing. And he comes to the conclusion of, well, the reason that you didn't like us because you resented the fact that you had to give up something to do the conventional life. And she said she had never heard it put that way before. And I saw it. And again, this is Debbie Reynolds. I saw it on her face as she came to that realization, and which led to her walking down the hallway, stopping. She was just going to go to bed, stopping, turning around and saying, well, you really like that children's story. And it was an amazing conversation after that.
Yeah, I just... You know, the end of the film where we see the whole, as we're kind of dancing around here, Brooks's character, John, is in his old room and he sees the closet. There's something up at the top of the closet. So he pulls them down, like all these old hat boxes. Right. And inside are these kind of old, you know, essay books,
short stories and essays.
Yeah. Like theme books, right?
That she wrote
back before the kids were born. Right. And he spends the afternoon or the entire day, whatever, reading them. And she comes in and sees, and she gets very kind of upset. And he's like, you know, why? I never knew about this. You know, why? What happened? And they kind of get into that whole thing. But by the end of the film, she's, you know, taken up writing. She's kind of writing about the experiment from her point of view. And you get the feeling that maybe she's rekindled something. It would have been nice to have a little button on it where she does something with that, or he acknowledges, you know, hey, mom, it's great. Why don't you take this up again? Or encouraging her instead of just kind of like, it felt like she had been abandoned by her one son for a long time because he was off having this other life. He comes, gets what he needs out of this experiment, and then just like disappears again.
Well, I mean, there's an optimism that the relationship has changed and will be closer. And you know, not everything has to be tied up in a bow. Real life is like you come to a realization, an honest realization between a mother and a son. And sometimes it has to sit a while to create something else. So the fact that she's sitting at a computer and writing the story of her side of the experiment, as you said, which is brilliant. And then Brooks, having had this yoke taken off his back, suddenly meets what we presume will be the girl of his dreams just because she loves his work so much. So it's just like, it's sort of like you always have blinders on when you are in a state of angst or depression, or you're looking at, you're looking for something in your life. And then when some truth or honesty comes off, the blinders fall off and suddenly the world is your oyster. And I think that's basically what the ending was about. And why we go straight to the ending, I don't know. You can turn it off now, except you want to wait for the five hanky tribute to our mothers at the end.
That sounds really disturbing. Like my mom found some five hanky tributes when I was a teenager and we still don't talk about it.
Exactly.
Cleaning out my room. No. To me, it's a nice ending, but it's almost like going in and buying a really nice shirt and then you get it home and there's that one little thread. You're like, oh, I got to snip this off now. It's not perfect. It's kind of, you know, eh. In this case, I wanted there to be one more piece of thread at the end of it, even if, and this is just purely me and what I need, Pat, out of this movie. You know, there's some phone calls I seem to remember earlier on in the film where they're kind of talking to each other. He is annoyed every time he has to talk to his mom because she's not really in his life until he figures out that he needs her for something. It would have been nice at the end if perhaps he was getting in his car and he gets a phone call from his mom at the gas station or something, and he sounds delighted to talk to her, and then he like gets in the car and drives away.
Well, first, we didn't have cell phones back then.
It was 1996. Zach Morris had a cell phone in 1990. It was a brick, but still, that counts.
Well, yeah, again, I guess I'm not as – I don't need the neatness of it.
You're smarter than I am. Just say it.
No. I just need the burst of honesty that allows two characters to, you know, move on with their lives. Now, interestingly enough, when you're talking about the early phone calls, the early conversations, it was two people not listening to each other. Yeah. More on John's side, I think, than – because Beatrice Debbie Reynolds had become a more honest woman since her husband's death. She had to survive. And in her honesty, didn't really listen much to the blatherings of her weird son, because she considers him weird. That's just the way it is, as compared to, you know, Mr. Stability, who calls her every day. So...
And I wonder how much of that was her really thinking him weird. And much like we talked about the kind of final revelation, is recognizing her own weirdness that she had to compartmentalize and give up in order to be, you know, become a mom and raise these kids and then deal with the aftermath of her husband. Right. You know, that neuroticism doesn't really help when you're trying to do all that other stuff. So maybe she was just thinking, you know, I recognize this and I kind of detest it and I wish things were better for him.
Yeah. It really was about two people rather than a mother and a son. Mm. Of course, that relationship is layered with many, many, many implications. But in this case, I really believe it was two people who were looking to try to break their communication gap and come to some sort of commonality and purpose. And the fact that she's a hidden writer was a very good way, because he's very insecure about his writing. Yeah, he has a bestseller, but he can't even sit down and write the next chapter of this BS he's doing. And suddenly he reads the source almost of his soul in that hat box with all her old writings. It was quite poignant to me.
Yeah. It's and again, that's what sort of rebounded the movie for me, because I think it starts off as a comedy. It ends as almost like a light drama, but in the middle, it's trying to like create that bridge between the two.
Find its voice, find its feet. Right.
Right.
You know, you were talking about the comedy, and there is a lot of comedy, more comedy than I thought. You know, one of the reasons that I didn't like this film, because it wasn't as funny as his other ones. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but it is very funny, and I believe he had the premise of the ending. You know how a screenwriter has the ending, perfect ending. She's going to, you know, he finds the writing, she starts writing again. So then he had to formulate the rest of the plot and the script, and you know how Brooks is. He's punching it up, and he's just adding jokes. I mean, a lot of film references in this. What is this, Fantasia, when she keeps bringing out the food? Very good. Very good stuff.
One thing I want to point out, and I didn't really realize this, but there was a co-writer on this this film, Monica McGowan Johnson, who is also who's written with Albert Brooks on The Muse and Lost in America.
Yep.
I feel I probably should have researched this. I don't know if they've ever talked about their creative relationship. You know,
I'd like to see an article or a interview about that. That's really interesting, because she adds some sort of ballast to his, you know, kind of wackiness that he has.
Yeah, because we think
women
about
tend to do.
Well, that's, yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. But I think to that, what I just went into a weird New York accent there. But because we think about an Albert Brooks film. I think probably because he directs and he also co-writes. So those two thirds kind of like overshadow the third of like, yeah, and he acts. Okay. So those three quarters overshadow the quarter contribution of the co-writer. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I'm glad you brought that up because I don't even consider her in an Albert Brooks film, but yeah, she always does screenplays with him. So what else I want to bring up? There was one of the dynamics that I liked between him and his younger brother was the dynamics of the balance of power in a mother relationship. Now I have three other siblings and there is a power game going on with us, you know, cause my brother lives near her and this is her protector and you know, my sisters have different things, but you know, my mother always says that you guys bring so many different things to the table that she actually likes each of the individual relationships she has with us. And to get to the point where you could, I mean, we're all like frickin' middle age now. I mean, we're on our way to frickin' Social Securityville. And here she is still alive to observe this. You know, and it that's why the movie resonates with me right now rather than when I saw it in the 90s. So,
yeah, I think I appreciate this movie a lot more sort of, I guess, spiritually than from an impression after having watched. I need to see it again because, again, I was not expecting it to be the kind of movie that it is, which is different than, you know, an Albert Brooks movie.
Well, you know, I didn't really remember what the plot was. I remembered the protective ice. And you know, in those days, I had my film friends, and we'd always see the movies. You know, I'm a big Albert Brooks fan, so you know, I had certain conversations with people, and I think the protective ice came up in every conversation because mothers have little quirks about that in the way they store food. just to find that little thing, it's just crazy. You know that he really sought out Doris Day to do the role. He really wanted her to do it. And actually, she called him up and said, well, why don't you come up to my place in Monterey and we'll discuss it. And he said, I have to get on one of those airplanes. I'm doing the puddle jumper where everybody has to be the same weight. You know, that sort of thing. He tells the story. But he gets to her house and she said, you know, I'm not going to do this film, but I just wanted to bring you up here because I love the script so much. But she wouldn't do the film.
I guess that's nice, but couldn't she have done it over one of those MCI dogs. Phones? 36 dogs?
Yeah, he said there were just dogs all over the house. And then she was showing him around, and she had a dog graveyard in her backyard. And she goes, that's where they all go. And Brooks said, to pee? And he said she just shut off after that.
That sounds like a bit from that should have appeared in one of his movies.
But he also asked Nancy Reagan. I mean, and she really wanted to do it. But, you know, at that time, Ronnie was deep into his Alzheimer's and she couldn't leave him.
She had to just say no.
Ah, there you go, baby. Woo! That's the four-star joke in the podcast. Very good.
Thank you. Before we get to the tribute to our own mother.
Yes.
I do want to mention something that I had not picked up on that this movie really made me think about is that like mid-90s color palette, because I thought it was kind of odd the way the colors on this movie, but then I thought, you know what, a lot of movies kind of looked like this in the 90s. Right. A lot of browns and grays. Like if you look at what people are wearing, it's almost like they're going to a sepia funeral half the time.
That's so funny. You know what I noticed? And this is something in Brooks' films, his particular use of soundtrack. I'm not talking about the Simon Garfunkel takeoff, which came about because Brooks knew Carrie Fisher. Carrie Fisher didn't get a dime from Paul Simon. He goes, tell him I want to use Simon, you know, Mrs. Robinson in my film. And that's how he got it. That's exactly how he got it. But anyway, I'm not talking about that. Very funny parody. same kind of car driving up, whatever. But I'm talking about his general soundtracks, which are just kind of tinkly little joyous songs. You know, if you look at Defending Your Life and Lost in America, I don't know about My Romance, but definitely those three films have a very similar soundtrack. And it's almost counter to his angst. You know, ding, 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 ding. You know, listen to the soundtracks. It's wild. I never listen to soundtracks. And that's one of the things I noticed.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because when we first put this on, I was watching it with my wife, and she was like, I think, putting together the shopping list or something. So she was kind of half paying attention. Right. And then she looks up at the screen and sees Albert Brooks, like, driving, getting in his car and driving away. Right. And she heard the music, and she said, wait, is this Defending Your Life? Because it's almost the same kind of opening, right? When he gets in the right. car accident, right?
Right. Very similar. Very similar. Probably the same stuff, you know. He just didn't want to reinvent the wheel. So, you know, he had a relationship with Stanley Kubrick. I was looking up stuff about the movie. Kubrick loved Modern Romance. He said, I always wanted to do a movie about jealousy. And he said, you pretty much nailed it. But he sent him the script for Lost in America. And Kubrick calls him up. He goes, I have this great idea, blah, 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 blah. And Brooks said, no, not doing it. Don't like it. They never talked again.
Oh, no.
So the imagine... Doris Day story and the Kubrick story in association with this is great.
I want to go to the multiverse where Stanley Kubrick directed the Albert Brooks screenplay of Lost in America. Please.
Please, sir. Wow.
All right. So let's
ready
talk
for our tributes.
Yes. In the last closing minutes, why don't you go first, Pat? Look, what do you want to say about your mother?
Well, I've learned a lot about her in the last 2 years when the family was challenged. She was the one making all the decisions about my dad's care, and she instinctively knows what to do. It is that inherent mother thing that says, you know, I'm ultimately going to protect you. And to me, that's the greatest tribute to her.
You know,
I told you it was five hanky.
Well, then I'll talk just so... Yeah. You know, thank you for that. And it's very similar to, you know, the kind of protector role. You know, we have very similar kind of ideas. When I was younger, you know, I think I've mentioned this to you before. I had not the greatest relationship with my dad. He had a lot of issues, and a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of those issues kind of were inflicted upon the family. And I understand him a lot more as I get older.
Right.
I don't agree with the way that he acted and kind of carried himself in a lot of respects, but I understand that kind of, like, you know, I'll call it like the midlife crisis, the, you know, the unrealized dreams and what's the point, and, you know, right. trying to keep the family together. But my mom, you know, she really had to protect her boys, you know, first me and then 11 years later, my younger brother, and make things as normal and comfortable as possible in that chaotic situation. And when I think about how old they were when all this stuff was going on, they were like in their, you know, 30s, their right. early 30s when all this happened. Right. I think back about like my early 30s, and, you know, I've been married for, you know, a long time, and a lot of my efforts are conscious in trying to be a better dad, for lack of a better term, than sure. I had. But I just think about, like, Jesus, they were just like kids, you know, figuring out all this big life stuff and turmoil and alcoholism and violence. Thinking about what she did to help us along, it's right. true heroism. And we are now
true
more
heroism,
on,
courage.
Right. And we're at the point where we're kind of friends, you know.
Oh,
it's
definitely.
It's strange to think about that, but I'm not clingy like I was when I was younger, and we live far apart, and we only see each other a couple times a year. She's actually going to be in town this weekend, which is really nice.
Very nice.
It's just nice to know that we all kind of came out on the other side of this thing, and we've got a strong, kind of wonky relationship. But it's about, I love my mom. That's what it comes down to, Pat.
We should have a toast right now. Same here. You know, I love her on many other different levels now. And also, we're only 22 years apart. I mean, when you think about that, it's crazy. They were 22 when they had me, and they become a contemporary. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to be sharing the fact that we fucking collect Social Security very soon. You know, it's just like, what? How is that possible? But it happened, and it happens because, you know, she's 22 years, only 22 years older. That's nothing. I have friends her age. You know, that, I mean, that's how it goes. But anyway, you know, cling, cling, a toast. And great pick for this holiday. I will call it a holiday. You can.
You know what? Damn it,
Pat. You talk to your therapist about why it's not a holiday to you.
Therapy? No.
Who can afford therapy?
Well, I spent a lot of time in therapy when I was a kid, thanks to that wonderful family dynamic I discussed. But you know what? Damn it, Pat. I'm going to take a stand and say I'm never watching Marvel movies again. And Mother's Day is officially a holiday.
Well, you know, I think we just have a different view of comics because you still read comics. I stopped reading comics probably in the 80s or 90s. So it's been a long time. So I cut it off at a point where I had that development from 1970 to about the mid 80s, where I knew the genre, I knew how it worked, and I felt that Doctor Strange felt like a comic book to me. It felt like that awe that I had when a really good actioner and again, balanced with the little, you know, psychological stuff. I was digging it the whole way through. And I know, you know, in these days of cynicism, to like a movie is very difficult, especially in this realm.
Hey, it's great. You like what you like.
You like what you like, baby.
And a lot of people like, you know, Doctor Strange. I just did not. And it's, you know, I have not enjoyed the last few comic book movies that I've seen. I mean, it was a miracle that I loved Spider-Man No Way Home as much as I did. But these things are getting, you know, Doctor Strange is only 2 hours long. When I told my wife that, she's like, what do you mean only 2 hours long? I was like, well, the Batman was 3 hours long. And I'm sitting there in the theater going, none of this is moving. None of this is exciting. Only like two jokes in it were somewhat, you know, smirk worthy to me. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? I'm going to spend the money that I was spending on movies and just buy comics.
So it's our cutoff time. I do have something at 1 p.m. now. I said, well, you're going to schedule something. I'm going to schedule something.
The dueling but schedules.
Thank you. Thank you again for drawing this in. I have a really great suggestion for our next film, and it was inspired by The Offer, the new miniseries on Paramount Plus, which I highly recommend to everybody who loves movies.
I keep seeing the commercial for it. I got to watch it. Yeah,
it's great. You'll get hooked in, man. It's only on episode 4, so, and they're long episodes, so you can do 2 and then another 2 and then you're caught up. So
cool. So what's your recommendation?
It's so watchable.
So you said your recommendation is what?
Oh, there's a movie within The Offer. I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, okay.
That Robert Redford's son called his favorite of all the movies, and you've never heard of it. So that will be our next film. Chalk that up with your mystery in 5 handkerchiefs.
You and the handkerchiefs. No, all right. Thank you, Pat. We'll talk about whatever that movie is next month. We got to find it out. And, you know, I guess I'll have to watch The Offer and take notes. But yes, thank you again, Pat. This is, it's always special. It's always fun. And yeah, I'll catch
you
next
month. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, your wife, all the mothers out there. It's great.
Yes. Happy Mother's Day to everyone as well. And yeah, we'll catch you next time.